So in contrast to the previous two talks, this is a very specialistic talk. But I think this is very good for the physicists in our audience, because I just have to explain a little bit what I'm talking about, and then we are equal experts on this topic. And what we will be talking about is a particular method in immunology. It's labeling cells with a certain dye. This dye is called CFZ, and you get a profile when cells divide of the concentration of this label in the particular cells. And the work that I'm presenting is very, very recent. I'm jet-lagged, and I've been working on this in the mornings since my arrival here. And it's joint work with Alan Perelson, Rustam Antia, who are both here, and Vitaly Kanusov and Sergey Pirugin from Emory and
Florida.
Thank you. I was looking for the name of the city. So what is CFZ? CFZ is a dye with this very long name that I will not pronounce. I will just say CFZ all the time. And the particular nice thing of this dye is that you can take out cells from an animal or from some system, put them in vitro, and you give the dye to this vitro system. The cells will then pick up this dye, and you can put them back in vivo or continue to follow them in vitro. And if a cell divides, then the dye is distributed sort of equally between the two daughter cells. So then you can measure the intensity of this dye in the cells. And if a cell has half the initial concentration, you know it did precisely one division. Cells may divide again, then they get a quarter of the initial concentration. And you can follow the cells for up to 7 or 8 divisions. This is really a very informative method, because you can really say this cell has done so many divisions. That is the major advantage of this method. It's approximately 1/2. So it binds to histones, and if the cell divides, it binds in the cytoplasm, then it is sort of equally divided between the two daughter cells. It is also a very important method in immunology. Almost all immunologists trying to quantify things in the immune system, like the maintenance of memory cells or during immune responses, they rely on this method. And what I would like to discuss with you is the problems that are associated with interpreting data that come from such a simple method as this. Okay, I think I said everything here. Here is an example, just 2 slides stolen from a paper of a collaborator. The example is from cells that were stimulated with one very strong stimulus. So at time zero, we here have the concentration of the dye in the cells, and all the cells have maximum concentration of dye. So this is maximum concentration, and here is a frequency or a number of cells. All cells are in the non-divided state. Then 48 hours later, you can do a similar profile in this system, and you see that the number of cells that have proceeded through zero divisions has declined, and you get a whole fingered profile of cells having done a certain number of divisions. So these cells have performed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 divisions. And the...
So these are all factors of 2?
Yeah. Yeah, so typically this on a log scale they are separated. Yeah. So this sort of pictures you find a lot in the literature, and the typical interpretation that an immunologist will give you is that after 48 hours most of the cells have done 3 divisions, just because we have this peak here. And then from that, if you know that the cells in 48 hours do 3 divisions, you just divide 48 by 3 and you have a measure for the division time. Yeah. And this is just count on a... It's linear? Well, anyway, it's the counts on a particular machine. So you have a sorter sorting the cells according to their density. And this basically means that you did 120 counts of cells having this intensity of the dye.
But you have more. That's less than half.
True. Yeah. So you have more. What do you mean? Yeah, you have more cells because they have been going through divisions.
Saying that fewer than half have done three divisions.
Yeah, you're completely right. That I will show a little later. Yeah. So there was this, I think, beautiful paper in the literature, authored by Amanta Geth and Phil Hodgking. Phil Hodgking is an immunologist who is very keen interest in modeling. And they proposed a very elegant and simple method to analyze this sort of data. This is a very complicated slide, so let's take all the time that is needed to explain it. Because if you understand what they propose and what is in this slide, then the rest of the talk will be easy. Because the rest of the talks is more mathematical. So what they do is they have a profile here at 60 hours, 72 hours, and 84 hours. And again, it is a large stimulation of resting cells. So it's resting CD4 T cells that they stimulate with polyclonal activation. And you can see that this stimulation induces a rapid cascade of divisions. So the cells go through all the division numbers. What they do is they estimate the surface area in each of the peaks. So then they know the number of cells that have done this particular number of divisions, here 3. And then they normalize that by the division number. So this particular peak is at 3 divisions. They divide it by 8 to know how many cells have done this number of divisions. So this I call the normalization method. It's 2 to the n, where n is the number of divisions. So you take away from the data the effect that if you go to the left, if you do more divisions, that you have more cells there. You remove the divisions, basically, from the data. So then they have this normalized division number normalized number of cells in every division number. And from that, they simply draw the distribution. So this profile looks like this frequency distribution. It's just taking all the cells, the area under the distribution sums up to 100%. And this particular distribution then has a mean. And this is, say, the mean division index at 72 hours. There's one important detail. When they compute this distribution and compute the mean, they leave out the cells that have not divided. And from this picture, you can see that there is a reason to do so, because these profiles, they look sort of Gaussian, except the guys that are non-dividing. And experimentally, there could be a good reason for it. It could be that some of the cells will never divide. They are not stimulated by this particular stimulus that you give. So they prefer to leave out these cells from their further analysis. Okay. So now we know at every point in time the mean. And what they do is plot this mean as a function of time. And what they observe is that the mean increases linearly. So the mean of this distribution is increasing linearly in time. And then they make, I think, a sort of intuitive leap. They say this is very natural, because if cells are dividing and I compute the mean division number, then this mean division number should increase with the division rate of the cells. The faster they divide, the faster this mean division number should go up. So what they propose is that the slope of this line gives you the division rate. And in other words, the inverse of the slope should be the cell cycle time. So their method, If this all works, would be very great, because from a CFSC profile with this drawing distributions and means, you would immediately know the cell cycle time of the cells, which is a much deeper interpretation than just saying most cells did 3 divisions after 48 hours. And I will, in a few minutes, I will be developing some models to see whether this all really works. One other point. So here is this increase of the mean division number over time. They say that the time at which the mean of this distribution is 1 will be the time it takes the cells to complete the first division. So apart from getting the generalized cell cycle time, I'm talking too long about this slide. So the slope of this line gives you the cell cycle time, and the intersect with the line where the mean equals 1 gives you the time to complete first division. And indeed, if you have a population of cells that is at rest and you come with a strong stimulation, you expect that the first division takes a lot longer than the following decisions, because these resting cells have to power up whole their whole division machinery, and once this division machinery is going, they can very rapidly do all the subsequent divisions. Final point about the slide, what they observed is that these distributions tend to be Gaussian. And their conclusion from that was that the times at which cells are recruited into division are also have a Gaussian distribution. Some cells are very rapidly recruited into division, they sit at this tail of the Gaussian. Some go very slowly, but this all has a Gaussian distribution. And then the standard deviation of this Gaussian distribution, if I go in time, is hardly changing. So they argued that most of the variance in the whole data comes from this recruitment into first division. And when cells are dividing, they sort of deterministically complete the divisions. Okay. It looks sort of normal. Yeah, so, and any biologist would agree with that, because these cells, they will have some distribution of their receptors on the surface. This could be normally distributed, log normally distributed, but it has some normal type distribution. And it seems very likely that this receptor number on the cell surface determines how easily you can trigger the cells into division. So it's just from biological background, this is not a stupid suggestion. Okay. This is a repetition of what I all said. So CFZ data are fingers, and you can fit distributions to these fingers to know how many cells there are in every peak. They divide this by 2 to the n, for 2 to the I, to make what they call a precursor cohort. So they normalize away the divisions to know what fraction of cells is really sitting in every bin. They make these precursor cohort plots. And then they compute the mean of this frequency distribution. But note, it's not a normal mean. It is a mean going from the first division to infinity. And this infinity thing has to be up there. And their conjecture is that their mean increases linearly in time and gives the division rate. And let's also, I will discuss three different means here. And mean 2 hat means the Gadden-Hodgkin mean. The 2 is for the 2 to the nth normalization, and the hat is for, it's a special mean. Well, I think I explained this all. So it's again a repetition of what I said. The slope gives the division time. The time at which their mean equals 1 is the time to first division, and hence they estimated from their data that on average the cell cycle time is about 20 hours in this experiment, and that the time to first division is about 60 hours. And this 20 and 60 hours is two numbers that I would like you to remember, because I will use these estimates a few times. So a cell cycle is about 20 hours, which is fairly long, by the way, because Alan has been saying that lymphocytes can divide every 8 or 10 hours. And the first division is really three times longer than the takes three times longer than later divisions. If this is true, it would really be a very good method, because I haven't made any assumptions yet. I didn't say anything about how cells divide, whether I can describe this with a differential equation model or whether I need time delay models. And the intuition that the mean of this distribution should increase with the division division rate really seems a natural distribution. If you think about it, it seems okay. And if it's okay, it would be good, because there's no assumptions behind it. Okay, so this is data from their paper. And here is the division number. So cells sitting here have done 6 divisions. Here is cell numbers, and this is the original distribution. Black is times 60, 72, 84, and 96. So you see this whole pattern shifting. And At time 96, the peak of the distribution sits at 5 divisions. So an immunologist would say, after 96 hours, most of the cells have completed 5 divisions. If I now just normalize these distributions with their method, then you get profiles that look like this. Know that you, if you normalize by this, you take away the expansion of the cells. So the total number of cells in each of these curves is declining. There is still death in the population. I've taken away proliferation. So total cell numbers can only decline. And then, if I now look at my Magenta curve at 96 hours, you see that the peak of the distribution sits at 4 divisions. So indeed, from these normalized frequency distributions, you get a better statement about what fraction of cells did how many divisions. Okay, so this was my introduction. Now we can go and do some work. And I have a number of questions about this method. And one of the questions is already addressed in another paper by Rassam Ancia here, Sergey Pilugin, and they have a paper in Journal of Theoretical Biology, and it's out by now. And what they show is that the slope of this mean need not be the division time, or the division rate, I should say. Whether the mean increases with the division rate depends very much on where death is occurring during the cell cycle. If most death is occurring during, say, the deterministic part of the cell cycle, where cells are really doubling their chromosomes, or if death is occurring more in the period before the cell initiates the cycle, gives you very different slopes of this mean. They show this, and they come with a new method. You do a sort of normalization, not with 2 to the nth, but with some real number to the nth, and they provide a way to calculate to what number you should normalize it. Is this less than 2? I think it's always less. Is it less than 2? Yeah.
Is that just because of death? No.
No, it is not because just of death, because it's really 2 death parameters. Cells are waiting to get triggered into division. In this waiting period, they may have a death rate. And then during division, they may have another death rate. And probably the death rate during division is a lot higher than the death rate in the waiting period, because cells that are doing division have all these checkpoints where the division went right, and probably if division doesn't go right, they will die.
Well, that's a detailed response, but I mean, the fact that it isn't 2, isn't that because 2 is an upper limit?
Yeah.
And in that sense, it has to do with death.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and they show this for what I call homogeneous models. That means models where all the cell cycle times are the same. So this does not apply to the situation that I'm discussing here. We have a situation of resting cells that you stimulate, and the first division takes a lot longer than later divisions. For such a situation, this analysis doesn't apply. So the analysis that I will be focusing on here is the heterogeneous situation that the first division is different from the later divisions, but I will have to assume that all later divisions are equal. So I will test the whole analysis for this sort of models, and one of the questions that I would like to ask is this Gaussian frequency distribution that Gedd and Hodgkin find really truly reflecting a Gaussian distribution in the times to first division? And the answer will be no. So here we go. Let's go and write the simplest mathematical model that we could write for this situation. We say we have a number of cells that have completed 0 division, and they are triggered to divide at rate P, and they may die at rate D. Cells of division index 0 land up in cells with division index 1. You multiply by 2 to account for the division, and then the system repeats itself. Cells of higher division indices are triggered to divide at rate P and die at rate D. These are linear equations, so we can just solve the whole system. First of all, you can easily see that there is a simple differential equation for the total number of cells. The total cell number is expanding at rate p minus d. Just sum the equations and solve the resulting sum. And if you write the frequency distribution of cells over these equations for this total cell number, you get a Poisson distribution written over here. And this Poisson distribution has a mean mu that increases with t at rate 2p. Okay, so for the normal equations, they are not yet normalized by the 2 to the nth factor. The mean is increasing with slope 2p. This is already confirming the conjecture of Gett and Hodgkin. They were saying the mean is increasing at slope p, but they were saying this for a normalized distribution. If you don't normalize, it's simply increasing at rate 2p. Let's now go for the normalization. So we have these solutions of the total cell numbers. I divide them by 2 to the ith, to 2 to the I, and I get a new frequency distribution, the frequency distribution of the normalized cell numbers. And that's again a Poisson, and now the mean is pt. So this truly confirms the conjecture of Gett and Hodgkin. The mean is increasing with slope p. So indeed, if the mean increases linearly, just from getting the slope, you would know the division rate and hence the cell cycle time. Additionally, if the equation for the mean is, oh, and here's my new notation, mu sub 2 means the mean of the normalized distribution, and no head because we include the non-divided cells. This is the arithmetic mean of the normalized distribution. If this arithmetic mean increases with slope pt, then I can solve when this mean equals 1, and it gives me the time 1 over p. So indeed, this line crosses the point mu equals 1 at the time to complete first division, which in this model is 1 over p, because it's a homogeneous model, all divisions go at the same rate. So we have two confirmations of the Gett and Hodgkin conjecture. We also have one rejection of the Gett and Hodgkin conjecture. We here see that in this differential equation model, the precursor cohort plot, or the frequency distribution, has a Poisson distribution. So this Poisson distribution, after enough time, will look like this Gaussian that they found. Yeah, so we very naturally, in these equations, obtain the sort of Gaussian distributions that they observed. In our model, the distribution of cells being recruited into first division is an exponential, because it's a differential equation model. So the fact that you observe a Gaussian frequency distribution doesn't tell you that the distribution of cells recruited into first division had a Gaussian distribution. Any distribution, at least this exponential distribution, gives you a Gaussian distribution, or a Poisson-type distribution. Yeah? So one of the assumptions of the Gett and Hodgkin approach is gone. There is no evidence that recruitment follows a Gaussian. We can add something new to the whole method. We here have this equation for how the total normalized cell number is evolving, and it's simply this exponential with slope d. So if I were to plot from the experiment the total normalized cell number, I would get a negative exponential. And from this negative exponential, I would know the death rate. So give me a CFSC profile, I tell you the death rate. That's the one thing that we already have. So that is something new. Now we go for the Gett and Hodgkin mean, the mean of the divided cells. So it's defined like this. It's the frequency the weighted frequency distribution divided by the frequency distribution summing with your sum starting at 1. You can just do the math from the frequency distribution that we had for the normalized cell population. And this is your new mean. So So now, the mean is not increasing with pt, but there is this 1 minus exponential in the denominator. So this will only increase linearly after a certain time has passed, and the transient that you have to surpass is of order 1 over p, which is the division time. So after a single cell cycle time, this starts to approach the line mu equals pt, and then it would then you would be in business again. Also, if I compute for this new model the total normalized number of cells that have completed at least one division, n hat, then it has the same form. You here have this e to the minus dt, what would give you the death rate, but there is again this transient period of 1 over p. So only after a certain transient will the normalized cell number decline linearly on the next on a logarithmic axis. If you would just solve the points mu equals 1 to estimate the time to first division, which was the conjecture of Gadd and Hodgkin, this would go definitely wrong, because if I solve mu equals 1 from this equation, I get that mu equals 1 at time 0. This goes to 1 at time 0. So just getting the time to first division from your estimate of mu will then to be will give you an error. And what you can better do is look at the data, take the asymptote of this function, wait till it has approached its linear regime, take the asymptote of that function and estimate the time to first division from the asymptote of the data rather than from the data itself. So that is a slight improvement of the method. Here I'm plotting, so we have discussed three means now, the mean of the original distribution, the mean of the normalized distribution, and the Gadd and Hodgkin mean. And I'm plotting them all here for their parameter estimates that a cell cycle time takes about 20 hours. And the heavy line here is the mean of the original distribution. It is indeed a straight line with slope 2pt, with slope 2p, time is on the horizontal axis. The dashed line is the mu2, the arithmetic mean. And indeed, you can see that it increases with slope p. And this little square here is at time 20, mu equals 1. This is the time to first division in this model. The first division takes 20 hours. And indeed, our arithmetic mean goes exactly through this point, so you would be able to predict the time to first division from that intersection point and the time, the cell cycle time from the slope. And this is the Gadd and Hodgkin mean. Here you see this transient, and it's slowly approaching the line mu equals pt. And indeed, if you were to estimate the time to first division when this Gadd and Hodgkin mean equals 1, you will make an error. But if you estimate it from the asymptote of the Gadd and Hodgkin mean, it would still work. Okay? Well, for the dividing by the 2 to the nth, I also have a straight line. It seems that you would be better off by including the non-divided cells. Forget about this dash dotted line and take one of these two. And the division by 2 to the nth gives you this nice feature that you can easily see what fraction of cells did how many divisions. So at the moment, indeed, it seems that the dashed line, the arithmetic mean of the normalized frequency distribution, is our favorite. But in a few slides, this will no longer be the case. I'm sorry? Yeah, because, see, we calculated, I go two slides back. See, I get mu equals pt, and that's totally independent of the death rate, and the death rate only sits in this normalized cell number. So they are independent indeed. But depends on, I know that things are going to depend on the death rate in, when I go a few slides further. When I was seeing this, I thought it was sort of natural that it didn't depend on the death rate. The increase, the rate at which these cells complete divisions, it should not depend on the death rate, because it's a frequency distribution, and it's not influenced by the number of cells sitting there. And the death rate determines the number of cells sitting there. So a priori, I thought that this was a natural result.
Death rate is independent of time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. So the only step that I will make in this direction is that the death rate of the cells that are in, have not divided, and the division rate of the cells that have not divided will be different from the cells that have completed at least one division. So I will say that these resting cells have different properties, but once they are dividing, I have to assume equal properties, otherwise this whole type of analysis stops. It gets unwieldy. Yeah, so this is where we were with the model. Here's the data that I just showed you, the Gedden-Hodgkin data. See that we only have this period from 60 to 96, and all the transients that occurred before time 60 are invisible in the data. And again, the solid line is the normal mean, the dashed line is the mu2, the arithmetic mean of the normalized distribution, and the dashed dotted line is the Gedden-Hodgkin mean. And you see that they all sort of increase linearly. The Gedden-Hodgkin mean and the normalized mean have run sort of parallel. So you would be tempted to conclude that in this data we have already approached the linear regime. And they are both increasing at slope pt. You don't explain then why these lines are not close to each other, on top of each other. But anyway, the slopes seem to be parallel, and this slope seems to be sort of two times the other slope, so you seem to be fine. And it's also from this line that Gedden-Hodgkin estimated this cell cycle time of 20 hours that I have been using in these plots. So conclusion up till now, we have three methods. The Gedden-Hodgkin method gives us a transient of 1 over p. It's in this, for these parameters, it's about 20 hours. The normalization methods give you that after the transient is over, normalized cell numbers decline at e to the minus d, so I can get estimated death rate. That would not be possible if I don't do the normalization, because then division is also sitting in the cell number equation. The lines will have slopes p, p, and 2p, depending on the method. And the intersect of the asymptote gives me the time to first division. So let's now, this was the simplest model, let's now complicate things a little. And let's indeed assume that a certain fraction of the cells may have different properties and that they will never divide. Could very well be the case that there is a fraction of cells in this population that is insensitive to the stimulus that you give. So phi we define as the fraction of precursor cells that will ultimately divide. And in this model I also introduce some time delay. Basically it is not required, because the only thing that we do with the time delay is shifting time. We say at time zero cells start their first division, and at time minus tau they were triggered to divide. So it doesn't complicate the math, it's just shifting time a little bit, and I can have a time to first division that is longer than the subsequent divisions. So here we go, for the model with the normal normalized cell numbers, I get that the total normalized cell number is declining on a logarithmic scale at rate d, so I can still estimate the death rate. We get these frequency distributions, and the mean of these frequency distribution is mu equals phi pt. So the slope with which the mean increases is no longer reflecting the division rate. It's reflecting the fraction of cells that are going to divide times the division rate. If I don't know phi, and that's the normal situation, I don't know what fraction of cells will ultimately divide, I can never estimate the division rate from the slope of the line. Similarly, if indeed mu equals 5pt, if I try to solve the time to first division from mu equals 1, I don't get the time to the first division, but I get 1 over 5p as the time to the first division. So the method stops working. There is this additional parameter that we don't know, and I cannot estimate the division rate. Surprisingly, if I now take this strange mean where they exclude the non-divided cells, things work out differently, because if I compute the frequency distributions, these phis cancel. And the mean of the Gedden-Hodgkin mean in the phi model is exactly the same as the Gedden-Hodgkin mean in the simplest homogeneous model. Which means that after a transient of one cell cycle, or longer, mu is increasing with pt, and solving the time to first division is simply 1 over pt. So now, I think the next slide has a graph.
And now you can just take 5.
And indeed. So here's the graph for phi equals 1/2. This is the arithmetic mean. This is the Gedden-Hodgkin mean, and the Gedden-Hodgkin mean has a slope that is twofold. Well, the asymptote of the Gedden-Hodgkin mean has a slope that is twofold that of the arithmetic mean, and this factor 2 is simply 1 over phi. So if the Gedden-Hodgkin mean and the arithmetic mean are increasing at different slopes, the difference between these two slopes gives you information about the cells that never divide. Yeah, so now suddenly mu2 is no longer our favorite. The Gedden-Hodgkin mean is our favorite. This slide you saw before, this is simply the data. I already said that these two lines are running sort of parallel. So the data suggests that phi is close to 1. There's apparently not a big fraction of cells that fails to proliferate. Otherwise, these slopes should be different. Conclusion again. So the first three lines of this table you have seen, we have added two lines. Basically saying that the arithmetic mean of the normalized distribution increases with slope phi pt. So if I don't know phi, I don't know p. But the Gedden-Hodgkin mean is increasing with slope pt. And thanks to this offset, thanks to this tau, I can also introduce a time to first division that is longer than the first division, but that is sort of trivial. That we could also have done that in the first model. Okay, well, I'm afraid this is a difficult one. It's the data. I'm plotting the total cell numbers. That's the black line. Total cell numbers are increasing because cells are dividing. The red line is the total normalized cell number. The total normalized cell number is decreasing because I've taken away the division. And I've argued that the slope of this red line should give me the death rate. I said, well, so then the loss of these cells should be a straight line on this logarithmic axis, which it not perfectly is. But anyway, the slope of this line would give me a death rate of about 0.25 hours. And then the green line is the number of non-divided cells. All these things naturally come out of the data. They are available. Well, the description of the top line is n equals e to the pt, p plus p minus dt. That's how this total population is expanding. If I know the death rate from the middle line, I should be able to get to estimate the proliferation rate from the top line. So that is written here. If the slope of the top line is 0.25, and I estimate a death rate of, coincidentally, also 0.25, then the sum of these gives me the proliferation rate, which is 0.05, which indeed matches the Gedden-Hodgkin estimate, because they said it's 20 hours. 1 over 0.05 is 20 hours for the cell cycle time. So this 20-hour cell cycle time, I could just also have estimated from these two lines. I don't need the means to do that. It can just be done from the total cell numbers and the normalized cell numbers. Then the green line, which was the non-divided cells. Well, the non-divided cells, N0, they follow the function N0 e to the minus p plus dt. They disappear by death and by being triggered into proliferation. P plus d we know, so the norm, that is what we just estimated. So the non-divided cells should disappear at the slope 0.05, and that's exactly what I found in the data. So these two figures, proliferation rate and death rate, are at least are consistent with each other, and it seems that the non-divided cells are disappearing at a rate p plus d. No. And what the experimentalists did, in the paper they only showed up to here. And the reason for that is that probably after this long time things are not homogeneous anymore. So some cells have completed so many divisions or the medium has been exhausted and that things become different. And you can see that the expansion is slowing down at these late time points. So maybe I should agree with them and omit these data points and just do this discussion for the first three data points. Let's see, we always like many data points to could have a good estimate of the line. So that means that if non-divided cells are disappearing apparently at a rate p plus d, then there is no reason to assume that a fraction of the non-divided cells will never disappear. I can completely describe their loss by the sum of proliferation and death. So apparently they all divide. So that means that this model with the phi is not the appropriate model.
What about the delays in that thing? When
not divided, no, because the delay, if we add a delay, was sitting up here. So the delay was just shifting time with a certain factor. And then I would have to assume that during the delay period, I still have this death rate. And then it all works out. Yeah. So let's forget about the phi. And let's say that all non-divided cells will ultimately divide, but perhaps at a rate that is much slower than the rate at which divided cells divide. So we introduce a p prime. And p prime will assume is smaller than the division rate of divided cells. And let's then immediately also introduce a d prime, that's the death rate of these resting cells. Probably the death rate of resting cells is a lot smaller than the death rate of activated cells. So things become a little bit more tricky now, but it's all doable since the system is linear. And here is the equation for the total cell numbers in the not normalized case. And what you see is that there is again this an E here which is defines a transient vector C. But if this transient is over, then the slope by which the cell numbers increase is P minus D. So that is the same as in the homogeneous model. If we look at the mean, where are we? No, this is not written out very nicely, but we here have a 2PCT factor. So when this transient is over, I divide the C by that C, and you see that the mean is increasing at rate 2P. I think I copied the wrong equation into the slide. There's a simplified. Yeah?
How do you consider that time delay, an additional time delay for recruitment? Because the time delay operates on the recruitment, but the death rate continues to operate before and after.
Yeah, so if you want to do that, basically I would say in this model you don't need a time delay because you have given the non-divided cells already a slower division rate. So the time delay, you could argue, is sitting in this P prime. They may take a much longer time to division.
Ralph, could you just remind me of the
Yeah. It's good to have a break also. So these were CD4 T cells, resting CD4 T cells. It's an in vitro experiment. So you take the cells in vitro, you add this CFZ, the cells all load up with CFZ, and then you stimulate them polyclonally with anti-CD3. And then you just follow, and after 60 hours, they do the first measurement. So they throw the cell, give the cells to a sorter, and you get your first profile. And then
in vitro.
Yeah, but so my whole talk is about this method. People also do this in vivo. So they take out cells from a mouse, memory cells, for instance. You label them with CFZ, put them back in the mouse, and you see how the CFZ profile of these memory cells is changing. And that would be a homogeneous experiment because you don't do anything to the cells other than loading them with CFZ. So then the first division and the later division should all be identical. And that's the case that Rustem did. Okay. Oh, this also gave me time to think what's happening here. So this is your general expression for the mu. There is a transient, this e to the minus c. If this transient is over, we just go to the next slide. And I get an expression of the asymptote of this mu, and see it's increasing with slope to p, as was to be expected. And I can solve the time to first division from this equation by setting mu equals 1, and I get this. T equals 1 over p plus p prime minus d plus d prime. And this is not the time to first division. So now this whole expression depends on d and d prime. Only if d and d prime are identical, I get something that is of magnitude 1 over p or 1 over p plus p prime. So these death rates are messing up with the estimation of the time to first division. And this transient, by the way, if I pick parameters, so p equals 0.05, we have good reasons for picking this. P prime is 1 over 60. Well, Gett and Hodgkin were estimating that the first division would take 60 hours. And if I take the death rate that I've estimated myself from this exponential line, and I just assume that non-divided cells live a lot longer, they have a death rate of 0.01, just a small number, then this transient that we have to wait for is about 20 hours. Which is not unreasonable because the experiment started 60 hours. So this would work. If we now go to the normalized distributions, you can do the whole thing again and you get this horrible expression for how the normalized mean is behaving and also how the normalized cell number is behaving. But again, you can see that there is one exponential here, e to the minus gamma t, which is defined as p prime plus d prime minus d. And after this transient is over, i.e. if you let time go to infinity, you approach an asymptote, which is mu equals p times t minus a over gamma, and a over gamma is this big parameter combination. So again, after sufficient time, mu t equals pt. So we would be able to estimate the division time from the slope of the line. But if I solve the time to first division from this asymptote, I get this expression. And again, you can see that I only deliver the time to first division when the two death rates are equal. So the death rates are again messing up the whole method. But even more problematic, for these parameters that are not unreasonable, the length of the transient is 600 hours. So that means that in my 96-hour experiment, I'm still in the first phase of the transient. So if this is the case, the method dies, because we can no longer assume that we are in the linear regime. These two lines are just slowly approaching their linear regime. That's the reason why they run parallel, and the slopes tell us nothing. Finally, the Gett and Hodgkin mean for this model. You do it all over again, and fortunately, now the story is short, I get the same description of the asymptotic mean. So the Gett and Hodgkin mean and the arithmetic mean in this heterogeneous model asymptotically are identical. Which then also says that the transient to wait for this regime is similarly long. So here this is illustrated for the parameters that we have just chosen. So this line is what you would predict if the methods were correct. It takes 60 hours to have a mu of 1, and then the mean should increase with slope 1 over 20 for the 1 over 20 for the division rate of later divisions. And this is what the two means do. So you can clearly see that if you have an experiment and you measure over this period between 60 and 96 hours, you see a line that looks perfectly straight. If you assume that you're in the linear regime and you estimate the division rate, it can be wrong in any way. So this would really invalidate the method. This cannot be done. You could argue that the normal mean, which has this transient of 20 hours, is increasing at slope 2p, is much more informative. It has a much shorter transient. So if you want to estimate the division time, just use the normal mean. It has a slower transient than the two other means. Things are a little better if you take the heterogeneous model and you allow the two death rates to be identical. Here is what you would predict if the methods were completely correct, and you see that both the arithmetic mean and the Gedden-Hodgkin mean after a reasonable transient are approaching the correct line. So the conclusion is that basically the whole method is destroyed if there is a difference between the death rates. And that sort of repeats the analysis of Sergei Pilugin and Rafson in the JTB paper. They also said that it all depends on the distribution of death over the cell cycle. Here we have that the distribution of the death rates in the first division and the last division can totally mess up the system. Let's look here. Where's my gamma defined? Well, gamma is here. P prime plus D prime minus D. If I give identical death rates, gamma is simply 1 over P prime, which is the time to first division, 60 hours. So the transient goes from 600 to 60 hours. There was a little note on one of the slides. This gamma need not be positive. It could be that P prime plus D prime minus D is a negative number, and then you never approach a linear regime. Then the mean will slowly bend off after a while. And there's biologically no reason why it has to be positive. So here's the conclusion. So the first five lines, you know, we added three lines. And basically you could say, well, because the normal mu method has the shortest transient, it would be the most informative for getting the division rate. But then the estimation of the death rate is more tricky because that still has this very long transient. There's something that I don't understand yet. Part of this is all very new. See that the intersect where the asymptote equals 1 is almost always identical to the length of the transient. And if somebody has a nice idea about it, that saves me a lot of thinking. Almost done. We'll end with a small warning. So this was all done with differential equation models. And I think the ODE formalism has served us very well in getting some expectations on how these means are behaving. We really learned a lot by using ODEs. What you could also do is just take this solution that we have for the full model and fit it to the data. Why go for the means? We have data and we have solutions. This is what is done here. So I fitted the differential equation model to the data. And you see that I get a terribly poor fit.
You fitted it for 60 and...
Yeah, so the...
60 and you predicted 72 and 84?
No. Good that you interrupt me. So the red dots are this time equals 60 data points. And the green dots are the time 72, etc. And then I fit these three distributions. So I have a solution of the model, and I ask the solution at time 60 to be as close as possible to the red points, the solution at time 72, to be as close to the green points, etc. So I fitted all three. And this is the best you can get. No, 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 it's the P prime O. It's the full model. Four parameters.
You couldn't fit since that part of the equation had the red point.
How about
just fit the red?
That was what I was asking. Fit just the red and predict then the others.
Then they will, if I fit the red, so what did it do? Then the others will be way out there. So it's finding. What is the problem with these with the ODEs, or Alan already alluded to this morning, that because things are exponentially distributed, at times just beyond zero, there will be cells in the 20th division class, because a very small fraction will be in the very high division index. Those cells divide at the same rate as cells in the second division class. So in ODE models, cells proceed way too rapidly through the division cascade. You basically need a time delay to prevent the cells to walk too fast. And what you see that the fit is doing, it could easily describe one of these distributions, but it can never describe all of these. So it's finding a sort of compromise. It's doing the red late and the blue early to get the best what you can do for this. I can contrast this with another model of the cell cycle, the Smith-Martin model that has a time delay and the same number of parameters. And if I fit the Smith-Martin model to the data, I get the distributions at the right side. So the difference between these two quality of the fits really say that ODE models are not appropriate for being fit to this data. They give us a nice clue about what all these means are doing, but they should not be used for interpreting CFC data. Is my conclusion.
Similar talks here, similar problems here a couple of months ago. And in many cases, to deal with this almost all that you need to do is just that we make the stochastic equations and they can check that you're not basically not what you mean, whatever all the expectations are sensitive to noise, not really relevant variable in this case. Would be able to normalize parameters in an appropriate way and see what people will eventually be able to do. And probably will be able to fit it much better.
No, I don't think so, because what is wrong here in this model is the fact that everything is exponentially distributed.
Yeah, but then if you get in an exponent, if you get a tiny fluctuation somewhere in 20th position, it will drive to zero and you won't be able to restart from there. So when you average all the fluctuations, eventually they will just kill off those tails.
Right. But I would say it's more natural. We know that the cell cycle times are not exponentially distributed because a cell cycle time takes at least, let's say, 6 hours. So it is more like a gamma distribution. A cell cycle time can never be exponentially distributed. That the largest fraction of cells has the shortest cell cycle time. That is really biological nonsense. There is certainly a fixed time associated with the cell cycle time. So I would rather go for a model that has this property than stick with the conventional formalism and try to get the right behavior out. So I think it's more natural to go to a model that has this natural time delay. Nowhere. Not in this one, at least. So the Smith-Martin model has this. Well, let's say, so the Smith-Martin model is basically a time delay model. So you say, I have a probabilistic phase that you model with an ODE. Cells are waiting to get triggered into division. And then you say they sit in a in-cell cycle for a time delta, after which they are in the probabilistic phase again, which you describe with an ODE. So you either describe it with a PDE, a population structured model, or you describe it with differential delay equations.
So do you have a fixed incubator delay, and then you just change the rate at the end of that in order to get different division times, or do you change the delay? In other words, if the cell cycle is 6 hours, you always rest for six and then have a rate of one per hour in the last hour. If it's 6 hours, then, you know, 0.1 in the last hour if it's 15 hours.
Not quite getting you, but...
Are you asking about Smith Martin?
Yeah, so in the Smith Martin, you create a delay. And then when you get to the end of that delay, then you have a rate of re-entering the
beginning. No.
What do you explain with the model? Is that...
Let's see what I have as the next slide. Conclusions, yes. Can I move this up? Okay. So in the Smith-Martin model, you divide up the cell cycle in two phases, called the A and the B phase. And so what you assume is that cells are exponentially follow an exponential distribution when they are triggered from going from A to B. And then the B phase has a certain length that you typically call delta. And at the end of this B period, you get two daughter cells in the A phase again. So I'll write you an equation. dEA is 0 dt, so that's the non-divided cells. They simply disappear at the rate d plus p. Or in our model, maybe d prime plus p prime. So this cell leaves the, let's say, the G0 state of the cell cycle. It's waiting for a trigger. And then it enters the deterministic phase of the cell cycle, p prime, I should write, p prime minus times a0. And this deterministic phase takes a certain time. So this you should basically write with a PDE, cells entering at h0, and they progress 4 time delta through this stage, after which they are done with the cell cycle and they enter the probabilistic phase again. So then I get the a1 dt is 2p b0 t minus delta minus, there's no p here, minus d plus p a1. And then that's the, okay, that is not wrong. It's, well, that's, sorry. Let me, so it's the B0 cells at time t of h delta, I could say. And now let me simplify this. This can be written as a delay equation because this is a linear system. I know that, so it is cells. Let me try to write it immediately. So what do we have here? It's the A0 cells at t minus delta. That's the cells that went into the B stage, times the probability that they survived, which is minus delta, and the death rate in the B phase. Yeah, am I correct, Rasten? So now I have a delay differential equation. This is the non-divided cells in the probabilistic phase. Then there is this hidden B phase. And I get the cells of the next stage in the probabilistic phase. And that's simply the cells that left, or the P, so the P should be there, the P prime, because that is the rate at which they leave, times the chance that they survive the B phase, which is the length of the B phase, times the death rate. And then the whole thing repeats itself. And if you want, you can solve the number of B cells by just integrating over the length of the deterministic phase. So the initial condition is A0 at time 0 is the number of cells that you start with, and all others are 0. Well, not necessarily. So you can start with a very large number of cells. Yeah, and so basically this model has one, two parameter, four death rates, you could say, and then as a parameter the length of the B phase. So you have five parameters, and in the fit that I showed you, we just fitted these five parameters with nonlinear estimation method. Yeah, so the new parameter that you get is the length of the B phase delta.
Well, you said there was the same number of parameters.
Well, what we did is make so the DB and the DA we made identical. So there's not more degrees of freedom.
And delta turns out to be a realistic number?
Yes, I think delta is. So the time. But we are talking another talk now. So what I get out is that the cell cycle time is about 13 hours. And I think delta is about 6. So half of the cell cycle time of the cells that have completed divisions is the deterministic phase. So 13 hours and delta equals 6. And so this 13 hours, so that basically means that delta plus 1 over p, because that is the length of the A phase, was 13 hours, so 6 and 7, more or less. And then for the first division, which was taking 60 hours, I think we got a delta of 40 or so. Yeah. I completely agree. So basically from the fitting procedure, if I fix delta at something between, let's say, 4 and 10, I get equal quality fits. The main thing about this Mitz-Martin model is that there is a fixed time delay. And how long it exactly is doesn't make a big difference. But it has to be long enough to you have to prevent these cells just going very rapidly through your ODE cascade. Awesome.
So if you look at this as both the initial state and the subsequent state, you've got two populations of cells. The model is a Smith-Martin model, you come out of the head ground.
Yeah.
And yeah. The problem is that I'm all the way to going down, somewhere or the other, for some conceivable state suspect. To fit with lessening parameter. It's the main problem I have.
Less than eight. So we have one approach, which we did with Dan Coombs. No. Where we said, we went along Phil Hodgkin's original assumption. So we now say that the deterministic phase is about half of the cell cycle time. But you could assume, let's say it's 100% of the cell cycle time. So then you have a model where the first division has an A and a B phase, and all later divisions have only a B phase. And that model is a lot more tractable than the full model. So maybe that is a way to go if you want to do a robust parameter analysis. So we have some preliminary work on this written up somewhere, and at some point we'll probably pick it up again. I still have a conclusion slide. Okay, so for the immunologist in this room, there's a good advice. If you do collect CFSE data, try to see this transition from a nonlinear to a linear regime. So you have to collect your data late enough that you have the linear regime, and early enough that you have the nonlinear regime, but also not too late, because definitely if you go too late, then your medium is exhausted and things will be problematic again. We've seen that the parameter estimation procedure is very sensitive to these transients and that these transients can be very long. So the whole method is, I think, problematic. We have said maybe we should go for the normal mu because it has the shortest transient. I think the whole normalization method remains very important. If I have CFSE data, I would always plot the normalized mean. First of all, to see if the Gettin-Hodgkin mean and the normal mean have different stokes, then you know something about the fraction of cells that don't divide. Also, you want to convince yourself that the mean is increasing linearly, because, of at least it's increasing monotonically, because if the mean stops increasing, you know something is happening in your cultures, and we have seen examples of beautiful papers where the mean just stopped increasing. So something is wrong there, and you have a very easy method to test for that. Time to first division remains a very problematic factor. You can also plot total cell numbers, normalized cell numbers, and cells that have not divided, and get the slopes of these lines that should all be in line with your other estimates. And maybe the conclusion is that you shoot all this information to get a good initial guess for the real thing, and that is a non-linear parameter fit with the Smith-Martin model. Finally, never fit ODE models to CFSE data. And I saw one reference today to a paper that did that. So don't trust the parameter estimates that came out of that reference. Thank you very much.
I'm confused. Everything before that bottom line is how to fit. And then you say don't do it.
Well, I'm saying don't fit ODE models.
These are old.
No, well, the Smith-Martin model had this time delay. So the structure of this talk is we use the ODE formalism to get an idea about how all these means behave. If
they don't behave. I mean, I don't really, I'm confused. Mm-hmm. And also, why not just try to find a model and fit it as best you can? I mean, you can prove very easily, you don't have to go through any of this discussion, when you actually got around to telling us that the ODE models aren't any good. It was independent of all the rest of the talk.
No, it's not.
It was just telling us that you can't fit the data.
No, not really, because I know that if I take a more reasonable model of the cell cycle, say the Smith-Martin model, and I allow the non-divided cells to have a slow proliferation rate and a different death rate, that indeed the mean will do what the mean in the ODE models does. So it will have a very long transient before it approaches its linear regime. So the ODE models do tell us something about the shape of these means. They don't get things quantitatively correct. They cannot describe the evolution of the profiles, but the evolution of the mean they correctly describe. And that we have tested by just running Smith-Martin models and plotting the mean. So the cases where the ODE models say, here it goes wrong, if you try that out in a Smith-Martin model, it indeed goes wrong. So the ODE method is just a convenient formalism for testing out all these dependencies. Nevertheless, it is totally inappropriate for fitting it dynamically to a CFSE profile. That is the structure of the talk.
I guess I was the same reaction. I was confused because, let me see if I understood your talk, because you showed all this stuff based on what you call the ODE model, and you went through various levels of it, that is, making it slightly more sophisticated at each level, and then pointing out the problems of interpretation because of that. And when I just went, I thought you had sort of got it all straight, and there was a reasonably clear interpretation now. You then showed this extraordinary graph, which said that I shouldn't pay, and that's when you said, yeah, I shouldn't pay any attention to anything I said because it doesn't look at all like the data.
So why bother?
And why not, yeah, just go straight to the Smith-Martin and just use that to determine
that would
the D's and the D's.
True. So maybe that would be more elegant. So you start with the Smith-Martin model, and you show that you show that the mean increases with slope PT and 2PT, because we wanted to test this original Gettin-Hodgkin conjecture. How valid is that approach of using the mean?
So you were driven, I can't get it now, you were driven because in the data, they of course had no model, and their implicit claim was you didn't need a model.
Yeah.
they may not be explicit, but the implicit claim was you need a model and you could determine cell cycle times and
yeah.
so on.
Well, they have a model in mind, but it's not the type of model that you would consider a model.
That's the funny thing, is that ultimately all these ODE models turn out to be completely wrong, and they haven't thought about things in terms of ODE. Being biologists, they thought in terms of what cells do after a certain time, and of course, all done in Excel. And it all fits really well. It was only when the sort of theoretical approach of using ODEs has now come back to the Smith-Martin model, which is very similar to what they started.
No, but I disagree. So, because what I've learned from the whole this analysis, that if the death rate of the non-divided cells is very different from the death rate of the cells that are dividing, that the mean division number is not increasing linearly, and it may take extremely long before it starts to increase linearly. That is what I learned. And I know from experience that this is true for the Smith-Martin model and for ODEs. And the ODE formalism was just a convenient formalism to obtain this result. So I can use the formalism to obtain the result, test whether it is really true in more realistic models, and then nevertheless say that you should never use this formalism to fit to the data. There's nothing wrong with it.
That's in order to convince yourself and us that these very oversimplified analyses are no good and doesn't take much. At least, but it seems to me if you have some model that does a reasonable job fitting the data, use that model and get as much information out of it.
No, but that's all.
I don't understand
except
to perhaps convince other people that what they're doing is arbitrary. But what more can you do than get a model that's reasonable at fitting the data, and then ask any question?
Yeah, well, the problem is the Smith-Martin model, if we allow for all this detail, has 7 or 8 parameters.
Right.
And you can prove, if you do, again, a mean-type analysis, and Rustin has been doing that, that CFSC data allow you to estimate no more than 4 parameters. So the Smith-Martin model has too many parameters. Yeah, but
never defeat that.
True.
But the model doesn't work. I mean, you can't do better than what the data. Understand the logic.
It's like you're saying that where the model breaks down is when you try to describe the shape of the distribution.
Yeah.
But the words find the mean. There's a model that has a fundamental problem, but you can get equal in that.
It has taught me a lot about the means, and I trust these results.
Yeah,
but see, if saying that the Smith-Martin model has too many parameters and the Gedden Hodgkin method doesn't work and ODE models are no good, it's just saying that we cannot get any quantitative information out of CFSC data, and we are struggling to make some progress here because this is the best and the most widely used quantitative method in immunology. And we are just struggling to pull out information there. And indeed, the best model has too many parameters. ODE models are no good. And the elegant Phil and Hodgkin approach is also, in several circumstances, no good. That is the sort of summary that I give you. But it could very well be that this Gedden Hodgkin method, I still think it's a beautiful method, because apart from these transients with the death rates, it's a great intuitive notion that the mean increases with the division time. So there you have a parameter. And that we would be able to estimate the death rate from CFSC profiles is also that is extremely informative. Getting death rates of cells is very difficult in the immune system. So
can I put it slightly differently? I'm not sure I completely understood, but I think the point is, what you're saying is that where it disagrees, where the model disagrees in terms of those distributions, your claim is that only has a very minor impact using the phase you first showed for determining the P of the.
No. So I basically distrust estimates for the division rate from the means. I think you should go to a Smith-Martin model to do a better job there. But the reason for distrusting that mostly is that I know that there can be an infinitely long transient there. So that's why I say, well, the Gedden Hodgkin method, we should be very careful about, because this first transient can be I don't know how long. And that is, by the way, a result that I learned from using ODEs.
Can you get any reliable information from these analyses? I still am left with not knowing whether you're claiming you can or you cannot.
Well, what I'm claiming is, if you just follow the Gedden Hodgkin method, then that's a very dangerous field. You could easily be well, not orders of magnitude, but you could be way off with your estimates if the data are all in this transient. So I have a big question mark at the Gedden Hodgkin method. Something new. We didn't know that an hour ago. There's papers that have fitted CFSZ data with ODE models. And I know that that definitely goes way wrong. Those papers are even more to be distrusted than papers that estimate parameters from by the Gedden Hodgkin method, because the Gedden Hodgkin method is at least more general than this ODE model that is, can you prove that is wrong? Then there is this Smith-Martin model, and there we have the problem that there is too many parameters. But if we mix it all, I think I have an idea about the death rate of these cells. We may have an idea about how fast these cells go. So if I can go from this 7-parameter Smith-Martin model to, say, a 4-parameter model because I have some additional information by the other methods, maybe I can do the job. And then I have some, and indeed, I learned a lot more.
Well, Fred, the goal isn't necessarily, for an immunologist at the end of the day, they'd love to know how to analyze this data simply to get a, you know, an order of magnitude estimate of proliferation rate. And
why simply? Do it complicated. What you want to do is reliably.
Yeah, but how? We don't have
that's the point.
You can come up with something that says, you know, the proliferation rate is 1 over this, provided you do it late enough, and with the caveat that death rate shouldn't differ here and there. Then that's at least useful, because now you know what the restrictions are on what you're calculating, and you can compare between experiments. But, I mean, immunologists aren't going to use an explicit model like this. But instead, they want something simple.
They want something reliable. It's simple is, you know, I mean, I'd rather when I went out in the rain that I didn't get wet. But that's not up to you. You don't get to vote on whether it's complicated or simple. What you want to do is reliably extract information from the data. And it seems to me that the only thing you've talked about where you have a fighting chance is this
Martin model,
right? But so far, it has too many parameters. So you have to do something.
I think that related to the question that was asked earlier about noise is if the problem is really what you're claiming, that you have a few cells that go way too far, and it's sort of a problem related to having a continuum density of cells. It's very unlikely that in your ODE you have still a small fraction to take that far. Right. But really, you're talking about you can only have one cell. You can't have a fraction of a cell. So something that's been tried in another area is to cut off.
Right. That's what the was saying.
So cut it off at some value representing one cell.
Right. ODE is going to cut off
pretty much. Which is another way to do the same sort of thing is to add noise.
Well,
yeah.
Was saying at the beginning of right, we already used the stochastic thing.
Yeah, so how I ultimately
a fudge way of using stochastic is just arbitrarily cutting off. That's what people have done. That's what Ilya was proposing before.
But it's not obvious to me that if I would do that I would have a mathematical model that is easier to fit to this sort of data than the Smith-Martin model. Because there's another parameter there. See, the thing is, we know that the cell cycle has a deterministic, as a fixed length period. A cell cannot divide in less than 6 hours.
Right, so I'm not trying to say it would be a better model, but the stuff that we're familiar with that has dealt with this, it finds it only weakly dependent on what cutoff parameter you use.
Here, the cutoff is probably time dependent. You know, in principle, if you let the cells divide longer and longer, then you can have higher filaments, higher reading classes.
Rob, the other thing you should say, Rob, I just want to make one comment about you never using OTs. Also, that's not really quite true, because there are circumstances
where
you have slowly dividing cells, where this deterministic phase of the delay is extremely short compared to the total time goes on. And the ODEs seem to work very well, and that's one of the circumstances where they haven't used the fit data.
But then maybe the other model may reduce to that.
Exactly. Right. And the other thing, if you look at the structure of the Smith-Martin model, it's really a system of ODEs with a delay in it. So the structure is actually exactly the same. You need to do more work on analyzing the delay system.
It's indeed true. So
more accurate for the data have to be that you could use that Smith-Martin model so that you could really determine the track. Because obviously if you have very good data, it doesn't matter if you have one more parameter.
No, it's more complicated. So the Rustin did work on this. But it's not exact. So what they do is this: for the homogeneous case, they can write an expression for the mean and the variance of the distribution in the Smith-Martin model. So that's two observables. Then you know the total number of cells. That's your third observable, and that's it. No, no, because but these distributions you can describe with their mean and variance. And in perfect data. Yeah, we have a formula for that. Yeah, so you can.
So you can ask the question: how accurate does the data have to be, given that you believe that formula, so that you can now extract?
Yeah, and then Rustin's answer is that you cannot estimate all four parameters of the Smith-Martin model, whatever the accuracy of the data.
Is it because the p plus delta comes in as one?
Exactly.
So what you can do is.
So we need an independent measurement.
With all cells in one phase, and Rob and I have talked about this, if you could start with all cells in one phase and then model on the transients, you might be able to get somewhere. And if you could do that, then you can get four.
This is only
the case of having one homogeneous population of cells, which Rob has been doing all this work very nicely to try and get to the place where there's some experiments which can be analyzed in just one population of cells. We've been looking at some of those luckily. But immediately, most experiments have these two populations of cells. And now we're fighting with something quite a bit more difficult.
So you pull out division cycle two cells.
Exactly. But then the trouble is you have to look at how it comes in two from the other one.
Can you talk about this tomorrow, or
I wasn't planning to, but I couldn't.
I guess Byron can try
to. Byron.
I'm just saying, more data, and there's, this may be the prettiest method, but there, it seems to me there are all sorts of other methods that have been used previously, where parameters enter differently when you're modeling, and therefore it seems to me what you have to do is combine that what my less beautiful data. With this and simultaneously fit all of it, and I feel you're obsessed with this thing.
But I agree with you. That's the way out. That there's too many parameters in a Smith-Martin model, so you have to combine it with an other observable like BRDU labeling or something. Yeah.
And that's what we're actually trying to do. We're trying to be able to discriminate the number of cells in the A and B phases. In theory, allows us to estimate four parameters. There are problems with finding an experimental method to do that.
Nigel.
It looks to me like you don't actually have a problem, because you just find gap information in Smith-Martin model, which is not physical. Because what you're saying is you can fit a Smith-Martin model, a family of Smith-Martin models, and they're all equally good. Right. So if you look at your Smith-Martin model of the thing which fit, so it's going to be something to do with the total length from cell cycle to cell cycle, what you want. The biologists are not, it'd be very nice to be able to split that up, but the thing you're trying to split up is probably such a refinement and not really one of the variables which the biologists.
No, it's not completely. It's not true, Nigel. So the main problem in the Smith-Martin model is that there is this different death rates in the A and the B phase, which you don't know. So what you can do is assume that all death takes place in the B phase. You get some parameter estimates. You assume that all death takes place in the A phase, you get some parameter estimates. You prove that the true estimates have to be in between, and you have an estimate with certain bounds. Yeah, I think that is
the data. That's the information in the data, and you can't somehow make it go away.
But I mean, I would have thought that, because I agree with what you say, I would have thought that there must be an invariant in there, something to do with an average death rate or something, which must be fitted.
No, well. Well, no, no. So if you say all the death occurs in the B phase, you set your death in the A phase to zero, you do a fit, and you get some average death rate.
But if I then compute my invariant, they're going to be the same. They're going to be some sort of average death rate.
Right.
You've got a balance between the A and the B.
Right. It's true, because we've done all that, and you get a sort of average death rate, which is exactly the average death rate that I estimated with this Gedden-Hodgkin approach. So the average death rate in the Smith-Martin model is 0.025. Because it's a very natural thing. These cells are disappearing. The normalized cell number is disappearing at a certain rate. And that can only be death. Yeah. The only thing is, we have identified a problem. There could be a very long transient before you hit the true death rate. But definitely the slope with which the normalized cells are disappearing is giving you something like a normalized death rate. And whatever you do in the Smith-Martin model, you should find that normalized death rate back. And indeed, you can easily do it because it's the length of the B phase and the length of the A phase, and then you average the death rate over these two phases when one is zero. And that should also, that there is an invariant parameter there. And a clue for that invariant parameter is the death rate of the normalized cell number, I would say.
Well,
yeah. No, not really, because the yes. I agree with you that you will get an average death rate. But depending on whether the death is occurring in the A or in the B phase, your estimate of the cell cycle time will be different. So you don't have an invariant cell cycle time. But that is, for me, not such a problem, because then you just give the range. Because that is the information that you can pull out of the data.
What you're saying is that you can't separate that out.
Yeah.
Which is what you can say. Yeah. You can't make it. You need to use another experiment, another.
Well, that's a little. I wasn't expecting beforehand when I saw a C of a Z profile that I would not be able to estimate the cell cycle time. Because this method is giving me the number of cells that have completed a certain number of divisions at a certain time.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it. But your fingers here and your fingers here just wait until they move one over, and then that's the cell cycle. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
So you think
you
should be able to do it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. How long does it take for the dye to get absorbed into the cell compared to the cell cycle?
I don't know.
Is it possible to
hours?
Hours.
Nigel, Russell knows.
I was wondering if it was possible to trigger the cells to divide and then go from the dye.
Yeah, it should be possible then.
The problem is that not the token that many people are doing that. And you're changing the properties of the vein cells you want to make it. So,
but you can pull out all the cells that are divided once, and all the cells that are divided twice, and put them back into
culture. The diode will do it after.
Right, exactly.
Why don't you just measure DNA and say B is all the helping cells and A more?
No, I mean, the environments are, I mean, you just need to put in other dyes so you can measure DNA content, yeah. Know exactly whether they're on a cell cycle, things that are incorporated in DNA, being synthesized,
yeah. Although, I think that is a way to go, but it remains a bit tricky, because DNA content is not exactly giving you the length of the deterministic phase of the cell cycle. It's giving you, you don't know what exactly.
It starts a little bit before DNA goes in, and what we've been thinking of saying is an RNA DNA plot. Because what happens is when you trigger a cell, you have to make mRNA expression of all sorts of genes, which are what the triggering event is all about. And so then when you start look at those plots, you see a very nice discrimination and you can get two populations. Hopefully, if we can convince things to do that, when they do these other things, we'll be able to get the four parameters, but again, on the end of a homogeneous model. So.
Okay, so put a G1 checkpoint block in there, and then release it. So then they're all right at the beginning of being normal.
Now we are doing things like this. So Phil Hodgkin is giving BRU pulses, and then the BRU will give you the point at which DNA synthesis starts. So we're trying ways to.
But it looks to me like the biggest problem is relating what exactly you take apart and point to the cell site.
No, they really do. No, I think that the biggest problem is really the distribution of the death rates over these two phases. And it could really be that almost all death is occurring during the B phase, because the B phase is a stress to the cell. And Rustem and Sergey have a beautiful paper in JTB showing how large the error can be if all the death is occurring in the B phase, and you estimate parameters of this. In a steady state population, the maximum error is 2, factor 2. So you can estimate the cell cycle time wrong by a factor of 2.
Well,
which? Well.
Yeah, well, yeah. Say parameters change with the
beginning. Yeah.
Right.
And then you've got truncation problems. You can only measure a finite number of divisions, so you've got other problems coming in too.
Let's first try to do this right.
Yeah.
If one wants to get perverse, also, I mean, you know, people who argue that the Smith-Martin model isn't quite right. Stochastic elements sitting on top of B phase and that has to be taken. One estimates the variance of the, trying to estimate the variance of the B phase, more parameters.
So, just in case you haven't got enough parameters, should the delay be the same the first time you initiate cell cycle and on the subsequent division?
No, we have freedom there. So, the delay in the first division is allowed to be longer than the later delays. And if you fit it, you get it out somewhat longer.
Oh, it certainly is longer because you know the stiff zone data, for example, the first 12 hours, it absolutely no division. In the next 24 hours, you've got two or three divisions in some of the cells. So you know the first.
But you fit that rather than changing just the exponential rate, you need to change the delay as well. Because you could get a longer average time to division by decreasing your exponential rate of conversion back into the B or by increasing your B phase. Make delta longer or make P.
Now, basically, we leave it to the fitting procedure to set this.
An hour at the beginning. So they just all the stimulation is right at the beginning.
I'm getting confused here. So, what? An answer to your question, and I didn't understand the question, but I can give the answer. Is that we leave it up to the fitting procedure to choose between delta and P.
But you've got delta division 1 and delta for the rest.
Yeah, and we have two deltas, and both are left to the fitting procedure.
So this thing is, you know, I didn't work on it.
I completely forgot what I was going
to do. All right, so this is just my mind. How many thousand is this?
Well, that depends.
Yeah.
Well, if you do. Depends on if you say that the first division has different. Yeah.
But you
delta prime.
And lambda.
Well, that's the piece here. Yeah. 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 There's three death rates altogether.